Welcome back to another episode of Cone's Corner. We're a couple weeks into the season. The Mets are 12-7. They're in the middle of their West Coast swing. It's going pretty well. What are they, 4-1, 5-1 so far in their trip? So it's looking pretty good. We're going to dive into all the Scherzer sticky stuff, how good Brandon Nimmo's been, just everything that's happened so far with the team. But yeah, Elizabeth, how are you? What's going on?
I'm good. Yeah, it's been an interesting comparing like the start of this season to last season, because I feel like you take a 12-7 start pretty much any time. And I also think it's kind of good too that, you know, you never like to see the Braves winning like 8 or 9 games in a row. But, you know, we saw what happened when the Mets played from in front basically all of last season, and we saw a division lead build and then whittle away. So in some ways, you know, if they can kind of hover around what they're doing and like continue to win series, they can't worry necessarily about what the Braves are doing. I don't know what you feel about this, because they're only a couple games ahead of them in the standings, and I'm not standing watching at this point, but I'd have to say if you told me the Mets would be 12-7 after however many games, I think they're in a good spot regardless of where they are in the division. I guess last year, you know, again, they were basically in first place literally the entire season and then didn't win the division. So in some ways, if they're like not in first in June or July, I'm trying to have a different attitude about this season and trying to like be more chill about how they're actually doing in the grand scheme of things, and just worry about more how the team looks on a day in, day out basis. So I don't know how you feel about that. But in general, I feel like other than getting swept in Milwaukee, which, you know, those 3 games were sort of just bad, but I feel like they've looked pretty good overall. The bullpen to me has really held down a bunch of games in a fairly surprising way that I didn't necessarily expect, but that's the key to any good team. And I think if you can have teams that win close games, that's always the mark of a successful team. And the Mets have had a couple of blowout wins so far, but they've been able to eke out wins by 1 or 2 runs in most of their games. So I think that's a good sign for hopefully continuing that positive path forward as we get farther into the season.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you that last year, with us being ahead all season and then losing it at the very end, that sucked. And hopefully we can keep it close. I mean, like you said, it's so early to be watching the standings, but obviously you're going to keep a little bit of an eye on it. And right now the Mets are currently 2 games behind the Braves, which is nothing. We saw last year what the Mets were up 10 games and the Braves came back and won. But it's so annoying because last year, the second half of the season, all the Braves did was win. And then to start the season now, that's what it feels like. All they're doing is winning. And I mean, they lost yesterday to the Padres 1-0. So I mean, finally somebody beat them, and
they win like 8 games in a row every month. Don't you feel like
that? And the games they lose are close, you know, like it's not, but they're just a really good team.
They're very good.
Way to say it. There's a really good team, and it's going to be a battle all summer long. But as long as they can keep it under 5 games, I don't think I'll really be worried. But going into September, you just want to have a shot. So if they're within 5 games going September, I mean, that'd still be a tough task to overcome, I feel like, against Atlanta. But yeah, I think the Mets are pretty evenly matched, and we'll see when the two of them play each other. And not this weekend, obviously, but next weekend, the Braves are going to come to Citi Field. So like I said, the Braves are so good, and they're going to be hanging around all summer.
Whichever team gets injured less will prevail.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, obviously, the Mets have had some health issues so far. Quintana, we lost early on. Verlander hasn't made a start yet this season. Marte's been dealing with his stiff neck. There's been a few things. I mean, it could be a lot worse, obviously, and hopefully Marte's all right. But the real surprise to me has been how bad the Phillies have been. I know, obviously, they're missing Bryce Harper, Rhys Hoskins they lost for the year, but they've been playing better lately, but I think they're still like 8-11, something like that. It's been a crappy start for them, but we know, we saw last year with them making the World Series that they're a good team, and I'm sure they'll be right in the thick of things when the summer comes to an end. But as long as the Mets can stay within 5 games of the Braves, and I mean, obviously with the 3 wildcard teams, they have a great shot to make the playoffs. And with this team, it would be a utter failure if they don't make the playoffs. I'm happy with what I've seen so far. 19 games in, 12-7. I'll take that. Nimmo's been playing out of his mind. And so far, I mean, it's obviously very early, but he's been earning every penny of that 8-year contract so far into the season. But yeah, it's been really good. The bullpen, like you said, has been awesome. David Robertson, I know he gave up a run yesterday, but
if he's going to give up a run, I'd rather be in that already situation. Up 3 runs. Yeah, so for sure. It was going to happen. And he only gave up 1. There were like 2 guys on. He kept it together. Just keep the lead. That's all I ask. And he did that.
And we said with them losing Diaz, you know, like they needed the bullpen to step up early in the season, and they definitely have. So, I mean, they've had plenty of opportunities where they could have blown games here and there, and they've really stepped up. A ton of guys. Robertson, Ottavino, Raley's looked better lately.
Drew Smith has had a couple of clutch outings.
Drew Smith
Thank goodness.
Has been awesome. I mean, John Curtis has had his moments. I know they just sent down Denny Reyes, but even when they called upon him, he gave them some really good innings. Dennis Santana, before they let him go, he had a couple good moments. I mean, Everybody in that pen stepped up. How about Jeff Brigham the last couple of days?
Yakubonis.
Jimmy Yakubonis. Oh my God. The job he did with Scherzer getting ejected for that BS or whatever. We'll get into it. But yeah, the bullpen as a whole is just, I think that's been the strongest part of the team so far.
Yeah, I totally agree. And just briefly going back to the rest of the NL East for a second before we focus back on the Mets. Yeah, if you look at the standings now, I mean, the Phillies started, what, 0-5, 0-6? They're definitely not that bad. I think, you know, the Marlins right now are, what, 10-9? I think the Phillies are still a very good team. They have had some weaknesses, I think, in the pitching department, which you have to figure guys like Wheeler, Nola, and even, you know, Taiwan Walker's pitched well yesterday. He gave him 6 1/3 quality innings. Like, I feel like their pitching is going to ultimately stabilize, which will help them. And they do have a lot of good arms in the bullpen. So I know they've had a couple injuries too, like Ranger Suarez, who was one of their best starters last year, hasn't made a start yet this season. I know Wheeler's been like sort of up and down a bit so far. Nola hasn't been consistent, but they have guys with track records on that team that I feel like are not just going to be bad the entire season. So I feel like they're going to get a lot of really good starts from like the top three or four of their rotation. And their bats are probably going to come around, especially when Harper comes back too, which I think probably at the earliest is supposed to be like May or June, I think. So yeah, it's one of those things where, again, the Mets got swept in Milwaukee a couple weeks ago, but then like, was anyone saying the Phillies season was over when they started 0-5? I mean, maybe their fans were, but like, I wasn't. I mean, I'm like, they're obviously going to win plenty of games. So at this point of the season, yeah, record to me is not as important as how the individual pieces are shaping up. And like you've said, overall, I would say we can get into this as well. The clear weakness so far has been like their starting pitching in terms of not necessarily just being horrible, but only giving five, or like the Mets have only gotten 6 innings from their starter, I think 3 times the entire season. And like 2 of those were Tyler McGill. I think Scherzer was the other one. That is definitely going to be somewhere where if their bullpen is going to be continue to be successful, they're going to need more length from their starters. And we can get into, you know, they've had obviously a bunch of injuries with that. Well, we'll see how that ends up shaping up. The random bullpen pieces they've plugged in have stepped up for the most part. And it's one of those things where you look at the bullpen and you're like, if you add Diaz to that bullpen, it looks even more lethal. But even without him, I think it's going to be fine. You know,
they'll add somebody eventually.
They're going to give up runs here and there. You know, Ottavino got the save yesterday, gave up a run, up 3 runs in the 9th on a solo homer. If he's going to give up runs while trying to get a save, like that's the ideal scenario, is when you're already up 3 runs. So I think for the most part, at this point, I trust Robertson and Ottavino. It seems like they've been sort of splitting the closing duties, maybe having Robertson face like the top of the thing. Order.
Buck's been given Robertson, yeah, if that
the tougher assignment.
Best hitters are coming up in the 8th. He's been given Robertson the 8th. And
right.
So I think his high leverage reliever is Robertson, and then Ottavino is close second.
And you saw that even the Oakland series, like when they were hoping to not have to use him, but you know, you had Robertson pitch the 10th inning of that game when the Mets had scored at the top and he managed to hold it down. So it seems like Robertson is clearly at the top of the totem pole for like everyone's available highest leverage situation. Like he would be the person. But Ottavino, I mean, I know he gave up the walk-off home run in Milwaukee, but overall, he's someone I feel like the two of them have sort of risen to the occasion of splitting those closing duties with when you have Raleigh and Drew Smith kind of in the next tier of the circle of trust. And then there's, you know, like we've said, there have been a couple other guys who have delivered quality innings when called upon, including Jimmy Yakubonis in the early Scherzer exit yesterday, which we could talk about next. But overall, and we can talk about the offense later too, but like we've said in the past, you know, every team, in order to be successful, you need like 6 good relievers. And I feel like the Mets are sort of there in terms of there's not that many people that have come in where I'm like, I can't believe they brought this guy in. Or it's like, you feel like it's going to be a disaster right away. And who knows? The season may dictate how we feel about certain guys. There have been several games already where they've eked out close wins, even against like the Marlins, where there was 1 or 2 runs. So those games all count. And we've also seen to this point their defense being very, very steady, which has really helped in those close games as well, not giving outs or runs away. And so I think when you have those trustworthy relievers combined with the good defense, being able to win those 1 and 2 run games, that will be the difference probably in how their season goes. So especially since they're not going to probably blow teams out all that often since they're not a hugely power hitting team. So, I mean, those games are going to happen, but you're probably not going to have too many like extreme 3 home run games by the or 3 or 4 homer games by the team. So pitching and defense as usual is going to be the foundation.
The defense has been phenomenal for this team too. I mean, look at just Brandon. I mean, we'll talk. I'm sure we'll get into how good he's been offensively, but
let's talk about him now. I mean, we're okay. Here.
Well, Brandon Nimmo has just been a stud. I mean, obviously went 5 for 5 yesterday, his first or his second career 5-hit game, but the first time that he was a perfect 5 for 5. I think the other time he was like 5 for 6. But yeah, and his defense and center. That's, I mean, we all know how well Brandon can get on base, and he's been a good hitter. I mean, that's why he was drafted in the first round out of high school, and he's an offensive threat. We've known that. But the defense has just come so far, and I know we talked about it last year, especially when he made that catch against the Dodgers. We talked about it a lot, but it needs to be talked about more because he literally saved the game in Oakland the other day. Obviously, he had that catch early in the game in the right center gap. He dove and caught. But I think it was the 10th. It was either the 9th or 10th inning where he made that diving catch in left center.
Yeah,
where
the 9th. It was one out in the 9th.
The run would have scored from second if he didn't catch it, and that would have been the game. He's phenomenal. And he makes plays look so easy now that maybe in the past he either wouldn't have gotten to, or it would have been way more difficult because of the read he's able to get now and his positioning. I know he plays deeper, but he's just turned himself into one of the best center fielders in baseball, obviously offensively, but defensively as well. Like if he won a Gold Glove this year, or in the future, it wouldn't be surprising. But if you told me or anybody that a couple years ago, they would have thought you were nuts because you just watched him play center field and he just really was a below average defensive center fielder. And that's changed. I'm sure it has to do with coaching and preparation and a bunch of things, but so much credit has to go obviously to Brandon himself. It's just been an amazing 180 because I love watching him play center field now. And a couple years ago, it was painful to watch him play center field.
And it's not just those diving plays, but it's also the reads he gets on balls now. You rarely see him misplay anything, and I feel like that was often the issue of his first few years in the big leagues, was like he just wasn't seeing the ball off the bat well. It would go over his head.
Yeah, he'd cut across and then he'd go over his head. Yep.
Like it's those routine-ish plays were just, or even the slightly not routine plays just weren't being made as often. And, you know, I feel like now not only is he making routine plays and getting to the ball when a normal outfielder would catch it, but also you're right. The times he like dives for the ball, he chooses his spots too. It's not like he's constantly diving unnecessarily. If there's a key spot, you trust that he's going to give his full effort to catch the ball at all times. And even, yeah, like there was a ball, what was it, in the 9th inning yesterday when he like ran all the way across the outfield and caught something at the fence.
Oh,
and
that was great. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, again, not catch probability was probably fairly high. I didn't look up the statistics on that, but you feel like the instincts are there. And it is so rewarding as a fan. I mean, I know there were so many seasons when the talk every offseason was, oh, we're going to trade for a real center fielder now. Oh, we need to get a real center fielder now. And it's so amazing. It's so rewarding as fans to have watched him work so hard and like really dedicate himself to becoming a better defensive outfielder and to have actually accomplished that. And every year it seems like he's gotten better. And we've been saying this now for the last couple of seasons. And it's just, it's really cool to me to see the kind of legacy he's crafting with the team, because not only has he already become a fan favorite and a beloved Met in his time so far, since, you know, he was drafted in 2011, he's already been in the organization for 12 years. And to see he's 8 more seasons of this, I'm just really excited to see, you know, not to look ahead too far, when it's all said and done, like where he'll rank in the ultimate pantheon, because I feel like he really wants to. And he's never someone I thought of even as among that echelon of like all-time Mets. You know what I mean? When you hear the name Brandon Nimmo, you don't necessarily think, oh, he's going to be one of the greatest Mets of all time. Like he just doesn't have that kind of aura in terms of his game. But it's really cool to me to see him talking so openly about, you know, loving the team and wanting to be here and dedicating himself and working, it seems like, harder than ever after he signed his huge contract, which you don't always feel from players, you know, the sort of cliche, but it's often also more when players sign with a new team, and the fact that he's re-signing with his old team. And, you know, you don't often see players or feel like they're giving extra effort after they've already gotten their money, but it seems like he's the type of person and the type of player to work even harder now that he's gotten, you know, 8 years, $162 million, to prove that he's worth it to the team and his teammates and the fan base. And it's really cool to me to see like what he's crafting here. You know, I can sort of see the fact that he could become, you know, be with the Mets for like 15, 16 years is like amazing to me. That's so cool. In our lifetime, there have been so few players like David Wright. That's it in terms of position players who, again, Nimmo is not the same offensive player that Wright was, obviously, but it's really exciting to see. You know, we're at year one of the 8-year extension, and he's already worth every penny to me. and then
yeah,
some.
As long as he stays healthy, there's no reason that he can't live up to everything you're saying. I mean, he's a lightning rod at the top of the lineup. I mean, he's an on-base machine. Like, he's hitting well now, and that's amazing. And I think he's hitting like 350, something like that in the season. But just even, he's always been able to draw his walks, and he's always been hovering around that 400 on base percentage, which is amazing. Like, he's been elite at getting on base, like top of the league since he came into the league. Like, that's been his MO. Now that he's hitting the ball, he's got some more power. Like, I think even
he's stealing more bases this year, too.
Oh, that's stolen like three bases. He's on pace to steal like 20 bases. And I think the most he's ever had in a season is 5, maybe. But it's been unbelievable. And Keith mentioned it yesterday that the power he's showing, too, to the opposite field. Like, the other day in Oakland, he hit a ball off the top of the fence that almost got out to left field. It was a foul ball that he was commenting on yesterday, but it was a deep one. And he's like, wow. He's like, I didn't even know Brandon had that in him, but he's starting to show more power. And I mean, obviously that bomb he hit off Syndergaard, that was a shot.
A 430
And I just feel like
feet,
he comes
yeah.
up in a clutch moment. Like, we always talk about, you got two outs, guys on base, who do you want coming up? And we've said McNeil. And I love McNeil, and obviously he's gotten off to a slow start. But Nimmo's definitely right up there with the way he's able to work the count, and he doesn't expand the zone.
He never chases. That's the thing.
He doesn't strike out a lot. Yeah, he doesn't. He doesn't chase. He's just a ball player. Like, I don't even know how else to say it. He's turned himself into an all-around great player. And obviously, he doesn't have an arm. That's the only thing I feel like that's lacking for an outfielder. But he's got the speed. He's getting good reads on balls. He's hitting the ball all over the place. He's drawing his walks. And like you said, now he's stealing bases. And I don't know if it was maybe because of a health concern or whatever that he wasn't stealing bases in the past, or if now he's just
because he knows he's been kind of fragile over his career.
So I mean,
far.
Obviously, that's a concern, and you don't want to lose him tearing his hamstring, God forbid, because he's trying to steal a base in April. But he's obviously conditioned himself very well in the offseason, and God willing, he stays healthy. I mean, I don't see why he doesn't steal 20 bases this year and isn't at least a finalist for the Gold Glove. But it's just, like you said, it's just been so fun to watch, to see where he came from and to where he is now and to where he still could get to. I mean, it's just, it's been a lot of fun to watch, and he's a huge piece for this team now and obviously moving forward.
Absolutely. And it's also really cool to think, I mean, I told you, when maybe some of the happiest I've ever felt at a player transaction is when I saw the news that he was re-signed. And I think it's also
surprising too. We all thought he was gone. So like, that also played into it, I feel like, you know?
Oh, exactly. And I think also too, you realize, especially with the rapport that he's built up with the fans, and it's also been really cool over the last, especially last year, going into this year, to hear him sort of develop even more as a leader and just like how he talks about the team and his place on the team. I never really felt like those were the vibes he'd be giving off, because, you know, he's always had that sort of happy-go-lucky, like goofy, wholesome persona, which has been fun. But I feel like he's really developed into a leader and someone who's very respected on the team, which is not necessarily kind of the image that I always had for him. And I feel like that combined with his play on the field just makes him worth so much more to the Mets than he would be to another team. You know, it's hard to build up goodwill with like New York fans. But once you do it and you entrench it, you think about Edwin Diaz too. Like, it took like 3 or 4 years for him to become beloved as a player. And it
sucked
takes
at
a
first.
While.
Like Diaz was trash that first season.
Oh, for sure. But I'm saying like that kind of relationship is so valuable, and it's hard to immediately create that with a new fan base. You know, it takes time for these players, most of them. I mean, some players like
look at Lindor.
Him
the first season, I feel like he's completely turned it around too.
Right, exactly. I mean, especially harder for players who sign with the team and aren't homegrown. But it's just really cool to see him develop into that core player and be, you know, it's one of those players you look at and you're like, I'm so glad he's on our team. Because, you know, if you were playing against him, he would be a pest.
He's a pain in the ass. Yep.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you look at someone like Luis Arraez on the Marlins, who's like one of the best hitters in the big leagues. I mean, the Mets won.
So fun to watch.
The Mets won most of the games that they've played against the Marlins so far. But you look at one of those players and you're like, he's annoying to play against because he's just an incredible hitter and never strikes out. And so Nimmo is one of those guys I feel like other fans respect, but also is like very much of a pest and annoying. And he has his little things. He sprints to first after a walk. He like rolls over in the outfield after he like dives for a ball for some reason. He kind of runs in like a goofy way. I just feel like he has his, you know,
I feel like, too, whenever he dives head first, like yesterday he slid in the home head first and it always looks like he's hurt. And I'm always like, oh my God.
Like, no, it's like, you know? It's like the, you know how Willy Wonka in that one scene where he's like on a cane and then he like rolls over and jumps up. That's like how I feel anytime any Met like slides into a base. It's like, they look like they've just died and then they like get up smiling.
Well, no, it's for training. He slid and remember he like planted into the ground. And
I know. It's like, none of these guys know how to slide too. Also,
which Marte is like, sliding head first. That was more unlucky, but slid head first. And his,
even Canna yesterday was like shaking up. I'm like, guys, just slide feet first. I don't watch games with other teams.
Oh yeah, that was in the home too.
Yeah, it was like the next batter because he was like stole third, and then there was a wild pitch.
I don't know and also, did you see Lindor's like heavily waving him on? Come on, come on! And it wasn't even close.
At the I know it wasn't even close.
I'm Canna like, thought I think, he had some blazing speed or something. Which I don't know.
He doesn't. He's surprisingly slow. Like that's one thing.
But hey, I have to bring something up though. Remember our little thing? Mark Canna's leading Brandon Nimmo in home runs. Remember, you were skeptical Canna's getting to 20. I'm still thinking he's going to get there.
I really don't, but I'm still taking the under. I would love that. That's true. Nimmo only has one. Canna has two. Okay. We'll see where that ends. Again, not that I don't believe in Mark Canna unconditionally, which
Canna's a good ball player.
He had the two run double insurance run yesterday.
I love Mark Canna. He's a clutch player. Another guy that grinds out. That's the thing about this lineup. Yeah, they don't have a lot of power, but this guy touched on a lot last year. But they grind out at bats. Like they were as a starting pitcher, they work you. And you got to face, especially facing Nimmo that first inning. He's always seeing at least four or five pitches. I feel like Canna at the end of the lineup working out at bats. Even Guillorme, like when he plays. I feel like he's always getting at least one hit. He's working at bats.
Or walk or something. Yeah, he gets on base.
In the at bat. Yeah. It's been good to see. And all right, can we dive into the Scherzer stuff? I want to talk about it.
Yes, absolutely.
All right, so everybody I'm sure knows, but Max Scherzer was ejected from yesterday's game going into the fourth inning because of sticky stuff that he claims, and I believe him, was just sweat and rosin. And for those that don't know, I know Buck touched on it yesterday, but there's been three pitchers that have been, if you include Max, there's been three pitchers that have been ejected for sticky stuff since MLB's kind of implemented these rules. And all three times, the ump that threw out that pitcher was Phil Cuzzy. So, I mean, there's something going on there. Obviously, he's more strict about it and looking into it. I don't know, but that's something that needs to be followed, that he's the only ump so far that's thrown out these pitchers. But I don't get it. Obviously, Max has been around forever. And like he said, he got checked before and after the third, and he'd have to be a complete idiot to come out with some kind of foreign substance on him for the fourth. And he said he washed his hands down below in front of an MLB official. They saw everything. They saw him put more rosin on, whatever. I guess I've seen it reported that MLB rules state that even if it's rosin, if it's too much, it can be considered a foreign substance and it can lead to an ejection. But how do you measure how much rosin they're using just based on stickiness? Like, oh, this is too sticky. That's not a measurement. Like, there needs to be hard hitting something to quantify that. Yes, he's cheating and whatever. And if you look at Max's spin rates yesterday, they were consistent from previous starts and it didn't show anything different. So it doesn't make any sense to me. And now obviously he's probably going to get the 10 game suspension because he was ejected for the sticky stuff. And there's kind of no way around that. I mean, I hope I'm wrong, but from everybody's reporting, it seems like he's going to get that 10-day suspension, which honestly, it sucks. But I mean, with him having his back issues and stuff, maybe it's not the worst thing in the world.
He misses maybe one start.
Yeah, but I mean, losing Max sucks either way. But
yeah,
I think Oral Hershiser said on the Dodgers broadcast that when it's just rosin, whatever, and we're inspecting and then ejecting Max Scherzer, like something needs to be changed. Something needs to be figured out and addressed. And I don't know. It's crazy to me. It blows my mind that he could be using what MLB is providing and he still gets thrown out for it. It doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah. I mean, the only thing I could see is like, not to play devil's advocate, but unless it was like on the glove and like, that's what they took issue with, which they made him like change gloves. And like, maybe that's an unusual scenario where they felt like the substance was in a place where it shouldn't be. I don't think should have been ejected. And I think that's the only thing I can try to think of is like why the umps felt, because what makes it unusual to me is like, this has happened since they started checking three times in total in like the 3 years they've been doing these checks. So either umps just aren't paying that close attention anymore, which I know they were sent a memo before the season to basically, because last year, basically, like, no one got ejected from a game for this. And I think because they were maybe not doing too thorough of a check on these things. But I think they were sent a memo this year being like, hey, we're actually, like, going to start cracking down on this again. And maybe they chose Scherzer to make an example of the situation, possibly because he's like a high profile person. I don't know. Because again, if this happens to like a random reliever, it doesn't make the news. Like no one really cares. I think it's possible that it was maybe an unusually sticky scenario and they felt like this was the moment to eject someone. Like that's sort of how I feel. I just don't think this would have happened if it was,
but like they didn't even like throw him out right away. Like he kept, was able to keep arguing. I mean, if you as the umpire really think he's using something, why did they even give him the leeway to keep explaining himself? If Phil Cousy was so adamant that he's
anyway,
cheating,
yeah,
that's the thing. And then, and you see, I guess it was kind of like they were joking with each other, but when Phil Cousy in the inning before, like basically shoved Scherzer's glove back into his chest and was like, all right, go back out to the mound. Like, not to have like a
prejudice. It kind of rubs me wrong.
Like, he had something out for him, or he wanted to make a stand. I don't know. It's just,
well, that's what I
there's
think.
There's no like real fine line or like what.
Well, that's why I think
he's been dealing with this problem for so long. You feel like they would have it down by now and have it figured out. But I mean, like we were talking about before we started recording, what happened with Domingo Germán was pretty much the exact same thing. And Germán didn't get thrown out, which I agree with. But Scherzer shouldn't have been thrown out either.
It's exactly.
It's just a bad look for MLB. And especially for they're trying to draw in new fans that I was seeing online yesterday. They're so confused about what's going on. I mean, even fans that have been fans for how long, they're confused as well. And it's just getting ridiculous, I feel like, at this point. And I mean, obviously we feel a certain way because it's our guy and guy on our team, but I don't know.
Well, because I mean, the thing is, right, Scherzer has never really been known as like someone trying to bend the rules.
No. And he's been outspoken about people using sticky stuff. Like when these rules first came out,
I mean, I 100%, he clearly like wasn't using foreign substance, in my opinion. There is literally no way.
Like I said, spin rates were the same. Yeah, like nothing
there's
was
no
different.
Way. He clearly wasn't using a foreign substance. Number one.
But why can't an umpire figure out? They need to have some way for the umpire to know mid game, see, oh, this guy's spin rate is going way up. Let's check him. Like something like that, that is hard hitting evidence that shows you the game's being affected by whatever this pitcher's doing. But when literally,
right, well, remember that's why the Mets checked
were
Joe Musgrove
exact same.
In the playoffs because his spin rates were up.
Exactly. And his ears were all
and they didn't find anything.
Like, oh my God. That's what I'm saying. Like the umps need to have more than just, oh, he felt more sticky than I felt.
No, I agree.
First of all, everybody's body reacts differently to different things put on them.
People sweat differently.
Yeah.
It was a hot day in Los Angeles.
Like when it literally wasn't affecting his spin rate or really anything, and he didn't even have great command yesterday. It's not like he was throwing, like Germán the other day was perfect when they checked him. Like he hadn't given up a base runner the entire game. Scherzer was all over the place a little bit, so I don't even know what the probable cause was. It really doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
The only thing I can think of is like, unless Dave Roberts specifically requested it.
Yeah, but
we didn't really see that interaction.
And when they interviewed him, Roberts didn't say he did that. So
right. That like, again, the only reason I could see, again, this having escalated, I don't know if umps want to like cave to the managers all that often in that way. Like, I don't think because Dave Roberts requested they check him, they would have just thrown him out. Because I remember like a couple years ago when they first started doing this, there was a whole thing with Joe Girardi requesting multiple times that they check Max Scherzer. And then remember he like threw a fit because it was like in the middle of the inning.
He started taking his pants off.
I mean, he was kind of like that was sort of one of the first viral incidents of umps checking pitchers for foreign substances. Mostly since then, it's been basically a non-issue. I mean, think about it. The other two pitchers who were rejected were like Hector Santiago and Caleb Smith, who both, I think, got the 10-game suspension for it. I mean, it was, I guess, a big enough deal in the game for that to have happened. But
I
sort of think that, yes, and maybe not a coincidence, it was the same ump every time. So either only one person is following the rules or only one person is going above and beyond what the rules say he should be doing. So I sort of think that they were looking for a moment to choose a high profile person to make an example of this for the season, because it hasn't really happened in a while that anyone's actually gotten ejected for this. And so that's what I sort of think. Again, not to like be a conspiracy theorist, but I think that the stars unfortunately aligned against Scherzer yesterday, where it was a notable amount of stickiness, even if it was with a legal and provided substance. And they chose that moment to be like, we are going to enforce this and make an example of him, whether or not he did anything wrong, which he didn't. That's what and again, now that this has sort of been brought back into the limelight after last season, really wasn't a big issue with pitchers getting checked. I mean, there was that one time with Madison Bumgarner and the ump feeling his hands for an unusually long time and staring at him.
Speaking of Bumgarner, he just got cut by the...
I was just going to say, well, I saw that on Twitter just now. He just got DFA'd by the D-backs. I know he hasn't been pitching well.
Welcome to the Mets, Madison Bumgarner.
He's not that good anymore, unfortunately. No.
I mean, if he was good, he wouldn't be getting cut by the freaking Diamondbacks.
Right. Who have good. Been decent.
They've been all right, but I mean...
No, he's not good anymore.
Did you see that whole thing with him and Contreras yesterday?
No, I didn't.
Bumgarner throws a pitch to Contreras. Contreras takes a huge swing. Wilson Contreras takes a huge swing, fouls it off, and he like kind of like yells as he fouls it off, like, ooh, like he almost got that. And Bumgarner's yelling at him, shut the fuck up, like shut up, you know, like stop talking. And then he walks Contreras, and Contreras like pimps the walk, backflips.
Oh, really? I totally missed
Bumgarner
this.
Bumgarner was pissed. Oh, yeah, you got to find it. It was really funny.
Oh, interesting.
And that was yesterday, so his last start as a Diamondback.
Damn. Yeah, because it wasn't good. Well, I saw part of the part. Shit.
Like when Muncy hit that home run and Muncy had to tell him, go get it out of the water a couple years ago. And he's always been a hothead. But I mean, it looked good when he was a good pitcher. But ever since he signed with the Diamondbacks, he's been pretty bad.
If you look at his like metrics on Savant, it's like the lowest percentile of everything, unfortunately. Yep. You know, he's had a really great career. The Mets should not sign him. I would rather them try a random person from AAA at this point because... Yep. He's clearly past his prime. It is unfortunate to see someone who, I mean, I went to several starts where he pitched against, I mean, we all know what happened in the 2016 wildcard game. There was another start, I remember a couple times where he pitched like a shutout against the Mets in like games I attended randomly, but the Giants were in town. So he's obviously had an amazing career. I hope he ends with some sort of positive uptick. I feel like Zach Greinke sort of had a renaissance over the, I mean, Zach Greinke was never back as to bad San Francisco, as Bumgarner is now. But yeah, maybe the Giants should just re-sign him, honestly.
They always find a way to fix broken pitchers, I feel like. So that might be this, and it'll be a homecoming for him.
Yeah.
Spot for him to go.
Although, yeah, hopefully
and they'll
not,
have to pay him nothing, you know, like he'll be getting a salary from whoever.
I'll be curious to see, how his career, I mean, I'm assuming he's sort of, how old is he? He's not even like that old, 30, like mid-30s?
Mid-30s, yeah.
Anyway, I'm curious to see how that transpires. It will probably be like, but the thing is, I don't know if the Giants would sign him. They've had some like injuries, so they probably could use him in as a body, but we shall see. That is sort of a surprising development, though, in terms of D-back signed him for like 5 years. They have
been horrible. I think he's like over a 5 ERA with them since he signed there. But
unfortunately, has not.
And speaking
out.
Of the Giants, the Mets are opening a 4-game set there tonight. And I feel like in past years, the Mets just haven't done well in San Francisco. Like, obviously, there was that crazy game last year where they were down a ton. They came back
and tied
it. And then they lost in extra innings. But I just feel like they've run into some really bad luck in San Francisco. So hopefully that can change. I mean, even I would gladly take a split this weekend. I feel like that would be good to get home on the road trip. Because what? They've lost one game so far?
They're right, five. So well, five they swept Oakland, and they beat
7-3. They could finish the road trip if they split. Somehow they win 3 out of 4. Not somehow. I mean, they're a good team.
The Giants are fine. The Mets could easily win. Could win.
But I mean, this has got typical Mets series written all over it with all the former Mets. JD Davis. They were talking about it on the broadcast yesterday, but JD Davis is tearing it up, and he's playing a really good third base. Wilmer Flores is hitting over 300. Conforto just came back from an injury. Hit a bomb in Miami.
Oh my God! There's so many for it's Mets West.
So, yeah, it's Mets West. So I mean. I'm rooting for those guys, just not this weekend. So hopefully the Mets can go there and take care of business. I know Manaea's going tonight. We'll see if they let Brett Beatty. Yeah, let's talk about Brett Beatty a little bit. We'll see if he's able to start against a lefty. But
I mean, I hope so.
Far from him because I think he's had some really good at-bats. So obviously it's only been a couple games, and he had that clutch RBI single the first game he played. And even a couple of the outs he's made, they've been hit really hard. And I think we saw that when he came up last year that he was just spraying the ball over the field, hitting it really hard. And I'm excited to see him play full-time now, get everyday reps at third base. It's been really cool to see Eduardo Escobar take him under his wing. And
that's been amazing.
Because he's taken his job, essentially. And Escobar's just, you can't be a better teammate than Escobar's been. And, I mean, that's been his reputation throughout his career, so I'm not surprised. But I just feel like that's going to be huge for Beatty because if he had a guy looking over his shoulder and somebody that was like really angry that this young kid's up and taking his spot, I feel like that would be a tough spot for Beatty to be in. But the fact that Escobar's kind of welcomed him with open arms and he wants to help him out and help him do well, I think that goes a long way and it's really going to help Brett Beatty in the end.
Oh, absolutely. You're right. That's why I feel bad with people like booing Escobar if he's not good because I just don't like, he's clearly not hitting well. But if you're a real fan, like you know how much everyone respects him and likes him. And yes, that.
And he was, until Beatty got called up, he was solid at third base, too. Like
That's the thing. Defensively he's been great. Like, I mean, not gold glove worthy, but, like, very good. Like, solid. Reliable.
Yeah.
And that's why I feel bad. He's one player where I really would feel bad if he got like booed by fans for not hitting, just because if you know what he brings to the team, and like, yes, he wasn't hitting, but I just feel like he's trying. And also he does bring a lot to like the clubhouse. And, you know, I just feel bad about like him specifically getting booed by fans. I'm not that he would be extensively, but like the game I went to, he definitely was like a little bit by some people. So again, I think the thing with Beatty and Alvarez, it kind of goes back to what I was saying earlier about the Mets record at this point of the season. It's yes, I want them to win as many games as possible, but I want them to play Beatty and Alvarez as much as possible. The season matters, but like those two,
so really does their development. Yeah.
Really matter. We've talked about this a little bit. Like Tomas Nito, as good defensively as he is, like his bat is nothing special.
He's a backup catcher.
Exactly.
He's a backup catcher. He should play no more than twice a week. Maybe come in late for defense for Alvarez, but at this point,
if the Mets are already up by like three runs or something.
Catcher Alvarez needs, if they're playing 7 days, Alvarez needs to be in the lineup at least four, hopefully 5 days.
Right. And that's the thing. It's like, I think we agree. Like I obviously want the Mets to win as many games as possible, and I want the season to be a success, but like you have to know if those two guys are up, you have to know what they can do. Narvaez is injured. He's not coming back anytime soon. Like now is the time to play Alvarez as much as possible. They need to know what they have with him, and they need to play Beatty every day including against lefties. It's also, again, games in April matters just as much as in September. The stakes are lower right now. Like this is the time to be playing these guys every day. And then if they struggle,
and hopefully when midseason rolls around, you know, like they're ready to go. Like,
and hopefully their Mets are still winning games. Yeah. You know, with them, not in spite of them.
Team to work around that. And obviously,
yeah, Beatty, there's the whole rest of the team. Exactly. Anyway.
Like Alvarez is chasing and everything. But I mean, Beatty right now, we expect him to be better than Escobar was. Alvarez, he may right now be around Nito's production. But obviously, even the last couple of games, Alvarez has started to look a lot more comfortable at the plate. He had two hits yesterday. The power is going to come. As long as he can stop expanding out of the zone a little bit, he's going
to
be fine.
And they have to play
right
though,
now. He's going to give you better that. Than Tomas Nito. I mean, that's just a fact. I think Nito is a great backup catcher. Like he's a solid backup catcher. One of the best backup catchers in the league, but he's a backup catcher. He's not your number one option. He shouldn't be.
He's not JT Romero. He's not Will Smith.
From baseball, and he's on your major league roster. He needs to play. Otherwise, what is the point of having him up? He could be a AAA developing. There's no point.
They could have brought up Michael Perez. Exactly.
Five times out of the week or four times out of the week. Yeah, exactly. He's here, and they made that decision to bring him here, so he needs to play. Exactly. And he hasn't even looked bad defensively. Like, he's had a couple plays, maybe he could have blocked, whatever, but he's been fine. I mean, he's not Gary Sanchez back there. He's looked all right. And you got to let him work through these kinks, like you said.
Exactly.
We need to let him work through, and they need to find out if he's not all right now, can he get better? And they need to see some improvement. I mean, but like I said, Nito is a great backup catcher, but he's a backup
Nito
catcher.
Is not worth.
Alvarez needs to play.
Yet Alvarez not playing. Exactly. It's one thing if Alvarez was like one of the top prospects in baseball, and then they had even like Will Smith or somebody, or
they signed JT Realmuto a couple years ago. Fine.
Instead of McCann, yeah.
Get it. But we don't have Mike Piazza catching for us. So we need the top catching prospect in baseball to play. He's on our team.
Right. And again, I'm still expecting them to win most of their games. We talked about this. Like the youthful spark is like what the Mets were missing last year and what they can have this year. Because I still feel confident with Beatty and Alvarez playing. You know, hopefully those guys actually contribute. But again, yeah, I don't want them to just be playing like platooning or like every so often. You know, it's annoying as fans. But also, again, now is the time to be playing them. Again, that's why bringing them up, especially Alvarez, the last week of the season made like no sense, basically.
It was desperate.
That was like a desperate move. But the Mets have already done that. So now they brought him back up in April of this year. The season is young. There's plenty of time for things to develop. This is when the pressure is lowest at this point of the season. Mm-hmm. So like this is the time for them to be actually developing at the major league level, is early in the season. And then hopefully we'll see how the season progresses. And not that, like I said, I'm not willing to like sacrifice the season for the development of the kids.
But they're good enough now. Like play. It's not even like they're going
to
be horrible.
And yeah.
Part of a 100 lost team. Like,
exactly.
Obviously, Alvarez has struggled a little bit. Like I said, he's been expanding the zone.
They need to just give him time.
But
yeah.
If you look at every level of the minors, and I completely understand the majors is completely different. Like it's a whole different animal. But every level of the minors he was at for the first month or maybe a little less, he struggled. Strikeouts, everything. He struggled. But then he figured it out. So we got to see him play now so he can figure it out.
I mean,
sitting on the bench all the time, he's not going to do that.
Right.
So we need to give him the at-bats. And like I said, he's been looking a
pencil
lot
him in five out of seven lines. Games of the week, yes. Or whatever. And then yeah.
And
that's
even if
it.
you're not completely comfortable with some guys catching, like I would be surprised if he catches Senga anytime soon just because of the movement on Senga's pitches. And that might
I
be
know,
difficult.
But at some but point.
At some point, yes, I get it. But there's going to be obviously there's going to be a couple times a week where Nito's going to catch. And you see on plenty of other teams where different pitchers kind of pretty much have a personal catcher. They don't say that, but they do. So if you want to line up Nito to catch Senga starts and one other starter Fine. Starts every time and then figure out the day after night games or whatever, you got to let Alvarez figure it out. Not figuring yeah. it out sitting on the bench. That's why they wanted him at AAA to get all those reps. But he, like I said, he's here, so he needs to play.
Yes, and you know, hopefully we see that. Hopefully we see some of that power. I mean, he's hit the ball hard over the last couple of days. I feel like it's only a matter of time with the power that he has. We know he has it, so it's just a matter of it actually manifesting in a game. You know,
and if he's going to be hitting ninth, like I think yesterday he hit eighth. But if you're going to put him ninth and he's going to come up in a spot and you're going to have Brandon Nimmo on deck protecting him, Alvarez should be getting some good pitches to hit.
Right.
You know? So they also need to construct a lineup where, yes, love Luis Guillorme, but if Luis Guillorme is hitting behind Alvarez, they may be pitching around Alvarez. He may not get the best pitches to hit, but if you have a guy like Nimmo lined up behind him,
I like him hitting.
They're
going
to
want
to attack
actually.
Alvarez instead of attacking Nimmo, you know? So you got that also needs to play a part, I think.
Right. Especially with someone who's as good about getting on base as Nimmo is. Yeah. You're not going to be pitching around Alvarez to get to him. So actually for that reason, I like him hitting ninth. If he has sort of struggled to get good pitches to hit, that's the perfect spot for him. Really put Beatty eighth or seventh or whatever at the moment.
And yeah. Then, if you do Beatty, if you have, cause I think Beatty is good enough and we've seen that he doesn't really expand the zone. So if they're going to pitch around him, he'll take his walks. We haven't seen that out of Alvarez. So if you want to hit Beatty seven, Guillorme or whoever's playing that day eight, you know, and then Alvarez nine.
Or Vogelbach or Fanny.
Yeah,
whoever
that is. Like if it's Vogelbach, maybe he'll hit seventh, Beatty eighth, whatever, because Vogelbach doesn't expand the zone either. But yeah, I just think you also at the obviously need to play them, but you need to put them in the best position possible, mm-hmm. which I think Buck will do going forward.
And I think the current team is helping to put them in as best situation as possible too. I mean, whether the amount of playing time they've gotten has not been maybe what fans would want, but I feel like the players seem like they're trying to put those two in the best position to succeed, whether it's, you know, Escobar being a mentor for Beatty. And then you saw that cute picture of them like sitting together on the plane yesterday that Escobar posted. Or like, for example, I don't know if you saw this the other day with Pete Alonso specifically shouting out Francisco Alvarez's at bat in extra innings against Oakland to move Escobar over to third base, which he ended up scoring the go ahead and decisive run. And like Pete didn't have to do that. But if a young
but he's a leader, Pete's a leader. And that was
and that was doing, nice you know, of him to say
boosting like, Alvarez's confidence like that goes a long way.
Exactly. And I think the current players who have been here for a few years, they know that it's important for these young players to feel supported and get reps and do well. And I think we've seen, you know, the support has been there from the players. And now it's just a matter of, okay, does the front office actually believe in these players enough to just play them every day and accept that just give them 3 weeks, don't mess around with them too much and just see what happens. Because again, it's a long season. So much can go on, you know, who knows what other like injuries may come where they may be forced into even more playing time. But yeah, I feel like we've seen, yeah, I just thought that was a very nice thing for Pete to say, especially on a day when he hit the game tying home run in the ninth inning. So like his at bat was clearly more prominent, but someone like Alvarez seeing that Pete really shouted out something that probably would have gone under the radar is really nice. And it shows how much the current players are buying into the importance of these young players being confident and developing. And I don't think confidence is really an issue with either of them, but yeah, I'm excited to see.
And how about Max yesterday asking to pitch to Alvarez? I feel like that goes a long
way. I love that.
Well.
Have you know, Alvarez like, catch him.
That's
you know, next time.
Yeah. Because that's
and Max didn't have to say that either.
Alvarez,
yeah.
You know, like a guy like Scherzer who's accomplished all that he has in his career and the age that he's at, like that's got to be a little intimidating for Alvarez to even like approach. And the fact that Scherzer requested that Alvarez catch him, I mean, that was
great.
Got to go a long way as well. I feel like that just shows the guy that Max is, and that's going to do a lot for him as well.
Right. And, you know, you saw, I mean, Scherzer only pitched three innings. He struggled a little bit in the first inning, but like they didn't really get crossed up ever. There were no.
And he
like,
let Alvarez call a lot of the game. Or I shouldn't say a lot of it was only three innings, but he called a decent amount of pitches, which is nice that he
right.
let him do that.
But you didn't see like major, really, communication issues between them. And I think Alvarez mm-hmm. caught him in spring training a bit too. So it's not like this was his first time ever catching him in any form of game. Yeah. I mean, maybe.
The only thing was Scherzer was telling Alvarez he needs to put his signs a little lower so Scherzer could see it. That was the right. only somewhat communication issue I saw.
But again, you know, the thing is Alvarez, he's what, 20, 21? He's so young still. And he has so much people knocking his defense. And like, yeah, maybe he can improve his framing or his blocking a little bit. You know, he hasn't, I don't think he's thrown out anyone on the bases yet, but like he has a strong arm. It just hasn't manifested necessarily successfully in the game yet. I believe in the raw tools and the tools that he has. Perhaps he could use more development time at AAA, but I really think that in the spot he's in, if they actually play him in games, I think he's going to rise to the occasion. I really believe in him at this point. And, you know, we'll see how the bat ends up playing. I believe in the structure they have in place can have him succeed. It's just a matter of actually him getting enough regular time to feel like a regular player just and not just someone who's being popped in. So, yeah.
Let the kids play.
Exactly. That's my motto. That was my motto going into the season.
That's it's the like, theme they of today's to let episode. The kids play. Let the kids play and that's stop what's gonna checking be the difference. Max for sticky stuff.
That's going to be the difference in the season.
Should be a fun year. I mean, all these young players, I think Vientos will be up at some point. So, I mean, the Mets are the oldest team in baseball, but I think in the next couple of years, they're going to be just as good as they are now. And they're going to be definitely not the oldest team in baseball because of all these young guys they have coming up and different moves they're going to make. So, I mean, you look at a lot of these guys, like Cano's going to be gone if this year. Escobar's going to be gone. I guess Scherzer, at this point, looks like he's not going to opt out. So he'll be here.
Verlander, I'd be surprised if he opts out.
Yeah, so we'll see. But yeah, it's nice to see they got some youth coming up and it looks really promising.
And yes, maybe eventually we'll see Verlander pitch a game. That would be cool.
That'd be great.
Can't wait for that. Whatever
everyone's
that's happening.
Making fun of DeGrom. What are we doing? The guy we signed to replace him hasn't even made a start.
I know. That's what everyone's like clown. I know. Well, you know I'm the biggest DeGrom defender of all time, but yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's like, we cannot speak.
Although it was nice the other day because like whenever DeGrom would leave a start early or whatever, like that would ruin my day and like we'd all be so worried.
Like that was a no hitter. Oh my God.
I felt bad for him, but it had no effect on me at all the other day, you know, which was kind of nice.
I mean, like, he's probably going to make his next start. It's like, you know what I mean?
But I mean, it's always something, but whatever. But let's stop clowning DeGrom and let's have Verlander make a couple starts first before we start running our mouths. Okay.
Yes. No, I totally agree. Any leverage Mets fans had was completely lost when Verlander was not available on opening day.
Let's see what he does first. All right.
Exactly.
Make sure this doesn't turn into another Jed Lowry situation before we start talking shit.
Well, thank you guys so much for listening. You know, as always, you could follow the podcast on Twitter at Cohen's Corner Pod. You could follow me at NYMFan97, where I am consistently tweeting about how good Brandon Nimmo is. You could follow Jake at Giblin_Jake. And yeah, looking forward to seeing how the rest of the West Coast trip progresses, what happens when the Braves come to town, and all the rest of the fun that is sure to happen with the rest of the season. You know, there's been a lot going on already, and, you know, I'm excited to see how it develops. You know, I think we're still sort of seeing the vibes of the team come together. I don't know if we're quite there yet in terms of me having identified, like, what the overall feel of the team really is, but I'm excited to see that continue to gel as the young players keep playing and as the team continues to form this year's bond. So excited to see that. Thank you again so much for listening. And as always, let's go Mets.